The Good Times Are Killing Me by Myna Hugh, a Merlin fanfiction read by Miss Snow Fox. When Merlin pulls up to Morgana's house, Arthur is already waiting for him under the large tree in the front garden. Merlin lets himself look for a few seconds. Arthur's familiar shape, the line of his back bold and demanding attention, before turning back to the dashboard and killing the engine. He takes a minute just to gather himself, closes his eyes, and drags in three steadying breaths before grabbing a large shopping bag from the back seat and tumbling out of the car. Arthur spares Merlin a quick glance as he comes up, then looks back down at the phone in his hand. A shopping bag also sits by his feet. "You're late," Arthur murmurs. Then, before Merlin can answer, he continues. "Got your half of the list done?" Merlin had been expecting no less than this kind of disinterest, but it's terrible all the same, and he allows himself a moment of self-pity before mentally shaking himself. "Yeah," he says, trying to mimic Arthur's casual tone. "Had to get Gwen and Lance a joint gift, but I don't think they'll mind." He doesn't say it, but it hangs between them anyway. He had run out of money. The expenses he had incurred earlier this month by living at a B&B before finding a cheap flat near his job had dwindled his account down to just barely enough to buy his half of the presents. The corner of Arthur's mouth twists up meanly, fleeting, but long enough for Merlin to see. "They'll take what they can get, I'm sure," Arthur says, tucking his phone into his pocket and bending down to gather his bag. He straightens and begins making his way to the front door without looking back. Merlin waits a few beats, then follows. Arthur is already ringing the doorbell when Merlin comes up beside him. A giant wreath hangs on the door. "I'm only doing this because of Gwen and Morgana," Arthur suddenly says, looking straight ahead. "As soon as Christmas is over, I'm telling them the truth." "I know," Merlin says. The phone conversation 3 nights ago had made the terms perfectly clear after all. "Just don't want any false expectations here," Arthur says coolly, shifting the bag in his arms. "Don't flatter yourself," Merlin says sharply. "You won't be the only one suffering tonight." "Who's suffering?" Arthur shoots back. "Darling, you wish I cared that much." Merlin bites his lip, but refuses to look down. He hadn't forgotten how devastatingly cruel Arthur could be, but it shakes him all the same. The door swings open then, revealing Gwen's smiling face and Morgana's slightly scowling one.
"Gwen and I were just talking about how we shouldn't even let you in," Morgana announces.
"This isn't even fashionably late, boys. This is just late."
"Sorry, Morgana," Arthur sighs, voice already warmer than it was seconds ago.
"Spent too much time trying to coordinate our outfits."
"Too many reds and blues," Merlin pipes up, pasting a smile on his face.
"You are the worst homosexuals ever," Morgana says, rolling her eyes.
There is a pause. Merlin shifts his bag from one hand into the other.
"You both look good, though,"
Gwen offers, moving aside to let them in.
"Looking good yourself, ladies?" Arthur says, stepping over the threshold first and giving both of them a kiss on the cheek. Merlin follows him through the door.
"All right, Merlin?"
Gwen asks, shutting the door and coming forward to hug him.
"Haven't heard from you in a couple of weeks."
"No, I'm fine," Merlin says, mustering false cheer, returning the hug and then putting his bag down.
"Just busy with deadlines at work."
"Poor dear," Morgana coos at him, her annoyance already deflated.
"Hang up your coats and then come into the kitchen and have some wine. I expect both of you to be wonderfully drunk by the end of the night."
She leaves them and then makes her way back down the hallway. Gwen stays behind, watching Merlin and Arthur with a small smile. Arthur hangs his coat in the small closet next to the door, then pauses to glance at Gwen before coming over to Merlin and helping him with his. Merlin holds himself stiffly as Arthur slides his coat off his arms, both of them careful not to touch.
"I'll take care of the presents," Arthur says once he's hung Merlin's coat and picked up their bags.
"You go ahead in the kitchen with Gwen and enjoy yourself." Arthur is looking at Merlin in the eye for the first time, but the calculated boredom in his expression makes Merlin quickly fix his gaze on the mirror behind Arthur's head.
"Yeah, thanks," he says, words sounding clumsy on his tongue.
Arthur pauses for a moment, then moves out of the line of his sight.
"You two are so sweet," Gwen says when Arthur's left them to locate the tree.
Merlin smiles weakly at her and steals himself for a long night. The kitchen is packed with people by the time Merlin gets there. He spots Lance immediately, apron tied around his waist and slicing vegetables at the island. Next to him, Morgana peers into a large pot, ladle in her hand. A quick scan of the room also shows Leon and Worldie seated with a small group of people at a table in the back, and Sophia and Vivian, wineglasses already in hand. The rest of the faces are only vaguely familiar, as Morgana's co-workers and university friends. Merlin says his hellos before pouring himself half a glass of white wine and standing by as Gwen shows Lance the right way to slice onions. "How are you, Merlin?" Lance asks, after he's let Gwen take over, his eyes still wet. "Where's Arthur?" "Taking care of the gifts," Merlin says, allowing himself a smile as Lance wipes a hand over his eyes and winces. "You guys get us something good?" Lance teases. Merlin fumbles, thinking of the orchard in the small ceramic vase that he had wrapped messily with tissue paper.
"Not as good as last year's, maybe, but I think..."
"You mean you couldn't figure out how to trump a honeymoon trip to Brazil?" Lance says, rolling his eyes before smiling widely at him.
"That was Arthur's idea,"
Merlin offers, but it comes out strange, his voice reedy.
"You know," Lance goes on, oblivious, "after that present, you could technically give us nothing for the next 10 years and we wouldn't have any right to complain."
"Then I know what I'm getting you next Christmas," Merlin drawls, heartened by Lance's laughter. They talk for several minutes about non-profit work and Gwen and new music before Gwen calls Lance back to her. Merlin hovers by their side for a moment, awkward, before making his way over to an empty stall and sitting down. A little later, Arthur comes into the kitchen, stopping at the threshold and scanning the room until he finds Merlin. Their eyes meet for a moment before Arthur quickly looks away. He takes his time, then pouring himself a glass of wine and saying his hellos. He lingers by Sophia and Vivian in particular, smiling and laughing loudly, and Merlin knows that he's angled his body especially so that he can be seen. It's juvenile, but carefully cruel all the same, and Merlin forces his eyes away and stares down at the lights reflected in his wine. A few minutes later, he feels Arthur settle in next to him. "I forgot to mention earlier," Arthur says, when Merlin looks up at him, his expression utterly bored as he stares down at his drink.
"What?"
Merlin asks shortly when he doesn't continue. Arthur glances at him before looking back down. "I found some of your books in my closet," he goes on, absently twirling his glass. "Come pick them up, or they're going out with the rubbish next week."
"Post them to me," Merlin answers. "I'll pay you later."
"I said, come pick them up, or they go out," Arthur repeats slowly, voice cold, even as his expression remains calm. Sometimes Arthur is so much like his father.
"Why are you making this so difficult?"
Merlin demands, fighting to keep his voice low.
"You know neither of those is an option for me."
"Be grateful I'm even giving you an option," Arthur says, unfazed, still not looking at him. "Trust me when I say I have no compunctions about throwing your shit out with last week's takeaway."
"Fine,"
Merlin hisses softly, setting his glass on the ledge. "Leave the key under the doormat and I'll come on one of my afternoons off." His pride protests shrilly, but he suspects that some of his mother's old favourites may be among the books left behind, forgotten when he had moved out of Arthur's flat in a whirlwind of boxes and bags and anger and heartache.
"And rob me of the pleasure of watching you crawl around on your knees,"
Arthur says, a vicious smile twisting in his mouth.
"I think not."
Merlin bites his lip as a wave of hot rage swells inside his chest. Across the room, Gwen glances in their direction, so he curls his nails into his palm and carefully pushes down the urge to be violent.
"After I get my books, I don't ever want to see you again," he says after a minute, speaking only when he knows his voice will be steady.
"I mean it." "Finally something we can agree on," Arthur says lightly, and lifts his hand to wave at Gwen. Arthur spends the next half hour making small talk and exchanging business cards with some of Morgana's co-workers. Melon stands by and gives polite smiles, gripping the back of his glass tightly every time Arthur introduces him with a hand to the elbow, the touch deliberately impersonal. It's a small mercy when Vivian drags them both in the living room, where a loud game of charades is underway. "We need your help," Vivian whines, wine heavy on her breath. "We need to win this round." Wilde is standing at the centre of a small circle of people when they arrive. He walks forward stiffly, hands clasping an imaginary object in front of him. "Bride of Frankenstein," Leon calls out. Wilde shakes his head, then motions to his head and mimics placing something on top of it gingerly. "Crown?" Leon tries. Wilde gestures at him excitedly. "King, a queen. Oh wait, a princess. The princess bride." "That's right," some man Merlin met earlier calls out. "Time's almost up." Wilde grins, then picks up another card from a small table as the same man peers over his shoulder. He puts down the card and raises three fingers. "Three words," Leon says quickly, motioning him along. Wilde lifts his head, expression exaggeratedly pompous. "Snob," Leon tries. "Prude. Proud? Yes? Oh, Pride and Prejudice." "You got it," the same guy from earlier says, waving a small hourglass. "And time." "How many points is that?" Wilde asks, raising his arms in mock celebration. "Deira is unstoppable." "Oh, that's okay. Don't mention me at all," Leon says wryly. He notices Merlin and Arthur and winks at Merlin. Merlin musters a smile in return. He senses Arthur watching beside him. "Merlin and Arthur are better," Vivian calls out. "We're nominating them as our power couple." "That's not right," one girl protests. "They weren't playing before." "Oh, come on," Wilde says good-naturedly, waving her off. "Let them play, let them play." "Merlin and Arthur are too good at this," Sophia complains loudly. "It's completely unfair. It's like telepathy." "I'm sure they practice in bed," Wilde teases, grinning widely at Merlin. "Dirty charades," Leon muses slowly. "Hey," Merlin says, keeping his voice light. "You should try it sometime," Arthur says over him, placing a hand on the small of his back in warning. "Are you playing or not?" Vivian huffs, hands on her waist. "Yes, yes, fine," Arthur concedes, dropping his hand. "For the good of..." He pauses. "Vivian's ego?" Wilde offers. "Yes, Vivian's ego," Arthur agrees, as the group erupts in laughter and Vivian flushes. "Merlin, you in?" Wilde asks, cocking his head in Merlin's direction. Arthur's fingers brush against Merlin's back once more. "I apologize in advance for owning you, Deira," Merlin says after a beat, forcing a grin. "Promises, promises," Wilde sing-songs, picking up a card. "Your category is song titles. You know the rules, right? 4 minutes. I'll monitor this round. Who's doing the acting?" "Here," Arthur answers. "All right," Wilde says. "Merlin, you're the only one allowed to guess in this round." Merlin nods, watching Arthur. Arthur looks back at him, expression considering, before lifting his shoulders with a small sigh and pasting a mild smile on his face. Merlin recognizes it as the one he puts on for business meetings. "Time starts now," someone calls out. Arthur picks up a card, Wilde peering over his shoulder, then puts it down. He holds up one finger, then mimics a microphone. "Name of the band is one word," Merlin says, knowing their routine. Arthur clasps his hands as if in prayer, then spreads them open like a book. Prayer, religion, Bible. Arthur points at him and raises one finger. "Bible?" Merlin fumbles, trying to shake off his awkwardness, feeling everyone's eyes on him. "One. First. Oh, wait. First book of the Bible. Band name is Genesis." Arthur nods as someone whistles appreciatively behind Merlin. Arthur holds up two fingers. "Two words." Arthur hides his eyes behind one hand and touches his shoulder with the other. "Shoulder," Merlin says, then pauses as Arthur brushes his fingers through his hair instead. "No. Touch?" "Two words, you said. Touch. Oh, Invisible Touch by Genesis." "That's right," Wilde says, waving a card. "Too easy, though." "Inferiority complex already," Arthur murmurs as he picks up another card, then hands it over. "Open Dragon always," Wilde draws as the circle laughs. Arthur ignores him and turns back to Merlin. He holds up two fingers once again. "Two words. Band name is two words." Arthur nods and makes a tiny circle with his fingers and bends down to inch his hands along the ground. Merlin is suddenly hit with a wayward sense of affection at the sight and waits for the feeling to pass before continuing. Bug, he says after a moment. Insect. Oh, beetle. The beetles. Arthur straightens again and holds up five fingers. Five words. Arthur holds up his index finger and suddenly grins widely. The expression is somewhat jarring, and Merlin realizes it's been a long time since he's seen such a look on Arthur's face. Smiling, joy, happy. Arthur nods, still smiling. He mimics a gun with one hand and points it at Merlin. After a moment, he pretends to shoot.
Gun, Merlin says in a steady voice, though he feels his heart jump stupidly.
Happiness is a warm gun by the Beatles.
That's it, Wildy says as several cheers go up.
Though, Arthur, I must say you looked unnaturally happy shooting your man.
Did I? Arthur muses as he turns around and picks up another card.
They go through the next one easily, another Beatles song, and then two others. By the time Arthur picks up his sixth card, time is nearly up. Arthur stares down at the card and then laughs loudly.
What's so funny? Wildy asks as Arthur hands the card to him.
It's one of Merlin's favourite songs, Arthur says, turning to look at Merlin, smiling crookedly.
You can't do that, one guy in the crowd complains. Hints aren't allowed.
It doesn't matter, Wildy dismisses him. This one's near impossible. Arthur looks at Merlin for a moment, expression calculating, before raising two fingers.
Two words, Merlin says, heart beginning to hammer for no reason.
Arthur lays his palm out and mimics hitting it with an imaginary object with his other hand.
Strike. Hit.
Arthur shakes his head and waves the imaginary object at Merlin before pretending to hit his palm once more. He shifts his palm around and continues to mimic striking it. Merlin might have laughed at the concentration on his face in another context.
Miner? Merlin tries. Blacksmith.
Arthur points at him. Blacksmith, Merlin says again, as Arthur holds up one finger and strikes it down with his other hand.
No first word. Smith. Smiths. The Smiths.
Shit, they are good, someone mutters as Arthur nods. Arthur holds up four fingers. Four words. Arthur lowers all of them but his index finger and points to himself.
First word is I, Merlin says, heartbeat now loud in his ears.
Arthur raises two fingers and touches them to his head.
Think, Merlin says again, chest tight. Feel? No?
No as in knowing. Arthur nods, then pauses. He continues to look at Merlin, the corner of his mouth lifting slightly. After a few moments, he raises his chin towards Merlin before lowering it slowly. Something sad and strange and self-deprecating slips into his smile.
Merlin gets it.
I know it's all over by the Smiths, he says around the hard knot in his throat.
Jesus, they got it, Wildy announces, tossing the card in the air. God, you bastards are using telepathy, aren't you?
Time's up, someone calls, holding up the hourglass. There's a small commotion as the points are tallied, but Merlin hardly pays it any mind. Arthur still watches him with the same crooked smile, and Merlin looks back at him, heart knocking. And just as Merlin thinks one or both of them might do something stupid and wonderful, Arthur breaks the gaze.
I can't stand this, Arthur says when the group has dispersed and they find themselves alone in the corner of Morgana's living room.
Stop, Merlin says, suddenly feeling drained. We said we would do this.
I know that, Arthur snaps. But that doesn't mean I'm reveling in your company.
So I'm actually worthy of your revulsion now? Merlin shoots back.
And he understands what's happening here. Both of them embarrassed after the strangely vulnerable moment a few minutes ago. Both of them angry at the forced closeness then and now, eager to prove something.
You're worthy of far worse, Arthur sneers.
This wasn't my idea, Merlin points out. Or have you already forgotten your overbearing sense of obligation?
We still talking about that, Merlin? Arthur says harshly. We can go there if you want. I'd love to discuss our respective shortcomings where everybody can hear us.
Be my guest, Merlin returns with forced bravado, You have more to lose than I do. What are you talking about? Arthur demands, brow furrowing severely. You know. Don't play coy. Don't play stupid. No, that's your job, darling. Now what the hell are you talking about?
We both know why you're really doing this, Arthur, Merlin says, feeling hot and reckless. All your eloquent bullshit about not wanting to burden Gwen and Morgana. We both know this is about Uther. We both know he has eyes and ears here, because God forbid you lose him. God forbid you prove him right about me being a worthless, wayward homosexual influence. And how funny that he's the one keeping us together after all. I said this is temporary. Arthur cuts him off, tone dangerous. As soon as the tree comes down, I'll have no problem telling people how wayward and worthless you are.
I'm sure, Merlin continues, keeping his voice cool even as his heart shakes. And after this is Uther's annual dinner party, and after that is the annual company function, and how many other excuses will you come up with to keep me on your arm? You may not want me anymore, Arthur, but you sure as hell need me, don't you? You still have to prove... And suddenly, Arthur is in his face, a hand wrapping around his wrist. To anyone watching, it's an intimate gesture, Arthur leaning into him and pressing him against the ledge above the fireplace. But Merlin can feel the bones in his wrist shift under Arthur's tightening grip.
You think way too highly of yourself, Arthur bites out, teeth bared in a parody of a smile, and Merlin can hear the fury fluttering in his tone. Believe me when I say you hold no such value.
Get off of me, Merlin says tightly, pulling at his wrist.
But do go on, Arthur continues, loosening the circles of his fingers, but not letting go.
I'm eager to hear what other sort of delusions you formed about your own importance.
Arthur, I said get off.
Or is the daddy card all you have left?
Arthur ignores him. You always did love using it against me.
No, it's all you have left, Arthur. Merlin snaps, miserable.
Merlin and Arthur, will you stop the public displays of affection and come over here for a moment?
Gwen's voice comes at them from across the room, startling them both. Arthur quickly drops Merlin's wrist and steps away from him, and they look to where Gwen and Lance are standing by a small table, cluttered with wine bottles. Lance is holding one of them aloft, rather gingerly, in his hands.
This one's in French, he explains. You two are good at figuring this sort of stuff out, aren't you?
Merlin wavers for a moment, then begins to walk towards them, hearing Arthur follow a step behind him. Gwen watches them approach with a wide smile on her face.
Got you, she suddenly crows, pointing up and laughing as Lance grins beside her. Works every time.
What? Merlin says, bewildered, his mind still on his exchange with Arthur. He pauses in place and looks up. A familiar spring of mistletoe, wrapped in a red ribbon, hangs from a small hook in the ceiling. His heart falls.
Come on, boys!
Gwen sings songs when Merlin looks back at her, her hands clasped eagerly.
Can't break tradition now.
Yeah, come on, Lance encourages wryly, holding up the bottle in mock salute. I promise this never gets old for me. Merlin glances back at Arthur, who stares up at the mistletoe with a shuttered expression. Arthur lowers his head and meets Merlin's eyes, registration written deeply into his features. Merlin notices that some of Morgana's other guests have gravitated towards them, curious, and he's suddenly filled with a deep loathing for all of them, even Gwen, because they have no idea. They have no idea what they're asking for. Arthur stares at him for a bit before smiling, cheerless, and stepping towards him.
Well, come on, sweetheart, he says without warmth.
It was not so long ago that Arthur had murmured the endearment into Merlin's ear, filthy, or amused, or tender, but it hangs mocking and hollow between them now, and Merlin quickly shuts his eyes. He leans forward, jerkily, and when their mouths meet, Arthur's lips are dry and unmoving, curled carefully in just to minimise contact. When Merlin pulls off after only a few seconds, feeling clumsy and raw, distantly aware of the half-hearted cheers around them and Lance's laughter. As he turns away from Arthur, he's struck with a memory of Christmas 2 years ago. Morgana had been the one to dupe them that time, and Merlin had stood with his hands on his hips, and protested loudly about being on display for heteronormative enjoyment, until Arthur had rolled his eyes and grabbed him by the waist, dipping him backwards like a damsel and kissing him thoroughly. And later that night, both of them a little drunk, and everyone else in another room, Arthur had pulled him back under the mistletoe, had held him by the hips and kissed him, slow and adoring, along the length of his neck. A bell rings from the kitchen, summoning them to dinner, and Merlin blinks, the memory already receding. Behind him, Arthur sighs noisily, and for the first time that night, Merlin gives into the sad thing heaving quietly in his chest. Because it is sad, after all, that he knows what Arthur is like sweet and close, that he can still feel all the places on his body Arthur once touched, that they stand now awkward and angry and unhappy when only weeks ago Arthur had climbed into their bed with his suit and tie on, smelling like coffee and newspaper, and kissed a good morning into Merlin's spine. But Merlin only lets himself dwell on these things for a moment, because Arthur comes up beside him and then grants him a bored glance, and Merlin looks back at him, unyielding, and then they're following the crowd into the kitchen, fingers barely brushing. No! Morgana calls out when Merlin tries to take a seat at the long table set in the dining room. I want couples sitting across from each other. I have this all planned out. Merlin, you sit across from Arthur here. William, you sit across from Leon there. We're not actually a couple, Wildy protests. You might as well be, Morgana returns, patting the back of the chair. Now sit. You wound me, Deira, Leon murmurs, giving Merlin a smile as he seats himself beside him. One of Morgana's friends sits on Merlin's other side. Across the table, Arthur sits down, flanked by Will D and Sophia. He gives Merlin a glance before quickly looking away. This looks lovely, Morgana, he says, surveying the spread. Designer shoes speak louder than flattery, dear, Morgana sing-songs, waving him off, then moves down the table, sitting with the others. Have you thought about hosting Christmas at your place? Leon asks, looking between Merlin and Arthur. The flat's big enough. God, no. Merlin quickly says with a laugh. We're terrible at that domestic business. Worst homosexuals ever, we've been told, Arthur adds, without looking at him. Well, for being so bad, you sure are damn good, Wildy says, uncorking a half-full bottle of white wine and filling their glass. How many years is it now? 3? 4? A little over 4, Arthur says easily, giving him a nod of thanks as he takes his glass. There is a pause, the dull din of chatter up and down the table filling the space. Merlin unfolds his napkin and lays it carefully across his lap. When he raises his head, Leon is watching him with a small frown. Now, Merlin, Sophia says, twirling her glass and pursing her lips. After more than 4 years, what have you learnt? What are Arthur's worst habits? Ooh, good one, Wildy says, grinning. I'd love to get the dirt on Arthur. Arthur sets down his glass and looks at Merlin. Where do I start? Merlin murmurs, returning his gaze. Wherever you want, Arthur answers, challenge clear in the curve of his mouth. Merlin picks up his spoon uselessly, then places it back down next to his plate. He has learnt a few things lately about the different ways to fight, to wound. When I'm reading a book, he finally says, voice surprisingly calm. Arthur tries to read it at the same time on the sly, and he always loses my page. Arthur's jaw hardens in understanding. I want to know what you're thinking about when you get all quiet on me, Arthur had explained, embarrassed, finger still tucked guiltily under the page. Aw, oh, come on, Wildy complains, throwing up his hands. That's just cute. I want the nasty stuff, man. That is adorable, Sophia coos. Arthur glances at her and smiles tightly, then turns to Merlin once more. Merlin looks down and soothes the corners of the napkin over his thighs. Arthur has a hard time throwing things away, he says. When he raises his head, a small, angry flush has begun to crawl across Arthur's neck. Merlin had found the small hoard in one of Arthur's desk drawers a few months after he had moved in, the cork from the first bottle of wine they had shared, the receipt for the first bed they bought together, some of his old, hastily written notes, the gaudy plastic lighter they had purchased at the last minute for Arthur's birthday candles. God, that's still cute, Wildy protests. All right, ladies and gentlemen, dig in, Morgana announces, then from the head of the table. There is a heightening of chatter and clinking of silverware and plates as they begin to serve themselves. Merlin looks away from Arthur's stare and clumsily scoops up a bit of mashed potato. Now come on, Merlin, Sophia wheedles, struggling with the pasta. Give us something good. I think that's enough, Arthur says, now ladling sweet corn beside her. Don't be so anal, Arthur, Wildy groans, rolling his eyes. Will, Leon says, trying to placate. If he doesn't want to, then it's just for fun, Worldy says, good-natured but oblivious. Jesus, this shit is just endearing anyway. I said that's enough, Arthur says again, voice taking on a hard edge. But I've got so much more, Arthur, Merlin speaks up, his own voice a warning, full of mock sweetness. Arthur puts down the ladle and lays his hand on the tabletop, and Merlin knows this face so well, fury carefully contained. Go on then, Arthur finally says, all fake smile. But my turn next. Fine, Sophia waves him off, then gestures at Merlin. Now, do spill, Merlin. Merlin pauses, considers. Arthur's always making these lists, he says after a minute, not looking away from Arthur's hard stare. He posts them all over the flat, like a neurotic. Everything you can think of. Lists of phone numbers, lists of wines to buy, lists of movies to watch, lists of historical figures to look up, lists of colours to paint the bedroom, lists of... He stops, throat tight and hot. Across from him, Arthur is looking down at the tabletop, hands curled into fists beside his glass. After their first fight, Merlin had found a list taped onto the fridge in between a string of phone numbers on a post-it and a dry cleaning ticket. Things I should have said to you last night, it had said. One, I'm sorry. Two, things will change. Three, I love you. Fascinating, Worldy says, cocking his head at Arthur. It's kind of magnificent when you think about it, Sophia adds with a slow, coy smile. But Arthur ignores them both, eyes now fixed on Merlin, lower lip nearly gone white with how hard he's biting it. Merlin returns his gaze, the last memory now lodged, sharp and aching in his chest. He has never really been good at this game, despite trying to learn. Never really mastered how to muster his defences high and hard around him, and devastate and destroy. Already he regrets digging up something so private, something still tender, both of them raw in the wake of it. He tries to shake it off, and reaches for the salad tongs, but he fumbles, dropping lettuce and croutons onto the table. He feels the eyes of the group on him as he hastily scoops up the food onto his plate. I'm going out onto the balcony for a bit, Leon suddenly announces. Need a smoke. That's such a bad habit, man, Worldy says, shaking his knife at him. Leon ignores him and stands, pausing only just to let his elbow nudge Merlin's arm before leaving the room. Merlin drops the last crouton on his plate and wavers for a few moments before pushing back his own chair. Need some fresh air myself, he says, standing. Wine's going to my head really quickly tonight. Oh, afraid of what Arthur might tell us, Worldy teases. Running away, are you? Wouldn't be the first time. Arthur finally speaks. Merlin pauses to glance at him. Would it, sweetheart? Arthur says, smile sharp and sardonic. Arthur has always been so much better at this kind of thing. I'll be back, Merlin says vaguely after a moment, dropping his eyes. He leaves then, hearing Sophia murmur lowly behind him, and finds Leon waiting by the balcony door. They step outside into the night silently. Thanks, Merlin says first, when they've pulled up two deck chairs and settled into them. Want to talk? Leon asks. Not really, Merlin says with a small smile, folding his arms across his chest, already feeling the chill through his thin shirt. Sorry. Fair enough, Leon nods, and then glancing at the tremor of Merlin's shoulders, shrugs off his sports jacket. No, it's all right. Merlin waves his hands at him. Merlin, I have 10 times the amount of body mass you do, Leon says wryly, before draping his jacket across Merlin's shoulders. I'm not sure that's biologically relevant, Merlin says, brow furrowing, even as he reaches up to pull the jacket more securely around him. But thank you. Leon shrugs and looks out across the woods, stretching into the darkness beyond the balcony. Merlin has always liked Leon the best out of Arthur and Morgana's family friends. He comes from old money, like the rest, but he's always possessed an honesty and sincerity and a sort of solidity that sets him apart. A lot like Arthur, ultimately. Is it bad? Leon suddenly speaks. Is... what? Merlin tries to recover himself. Leon glances at him before looking back across the grounds. Will you at least tell me? Is it bad? You look... No, Merlin says quickly, pauses, then says quiet and wretched, "Yes." He lets himself remember that last night, door slamming so hard that the glass throughout the flat had shuddered violently, pausing on his knees in the middle of a small sea of records and clothes and books to dig his hands into his eyes. "Well, I hope you can work it out," Leon says. Merlin shakes himself free of the memory, looks down, and brushes the sleeve of Leon's jacket off his thigh, suddenly sensitive there. "I don't know," he says, honest. "I've known Arthur for a long time," Leon continues. "I know his strong points. I know where he's weak. And I think you're good for him, in a fundamental way." In the corner of the balcony, a line of small garden gnomes decked in Christmas lights grins at Merlin. "And if you'll let me say this, I think he's good for you too," Leon offers after a moment, cautious. "Could have fooled me," Merlin murmurs, and smiles ruefully when Leon turns to him. The sad thing in his chest heaves once more. Merlin slips back into the house alone half an hour later, Leon having stayed outside a little longer for a smoke by himself. It had been good just to get away from it all for a bit, the cool night air and quiet having calmed him and tamed the hot coiling in his heart. He hears voices from the living room and begins to follow the sound, but pauses when he remembers Leon's jacket is still resting over his shoulders. Shrugging it off, he folds it across a chair near the balcony door and smooths out the wrinkles in the arms. "You sure are terrible at being a pretend boyfriend," Arthur's voice comes from behind him. Merlin turns around slowly. Arthur is standing several feet away from him, one hand tucked into his pocket and the other cradling a glass. Whiskey, Merlin guesses from the colour of the drink. Arthur studies Leon's jacket before looking at him. "That was some spectacular shit you pulled back there," Arthur says. "You push, I push back," Merlin tells him, suddenly tired as hell. "I'm talking about you nearly giving us away," Arthur bites out. "You're damn lucky we're sitting with the dimmer half of our social circle tonight." Merlin thinks about Leon on the other side of the windows and wonders if he can hear. "But while we're on the subject," Arthur continues, "bravo on your little show. Never knew you could do Heartless so well." "Learnt from the best," Merlin murmurs, turning away from him, the ache starting up again. And then Arthur is in his space, grabbing his elbow and forcing him back around. "Did it feel good, Merlin?" Arthur sneers. "Did it feel wonderful mocking my wasted affections like that?" Merlin looks at Arthur, the devastating expanse of him, brutally handsome and cold. The ache twists deeper now, unrelenting. "No," he answers, feeling too wrecked to lie. Arthur pauses and looks at him, caught off guard. Merlin swallows past the thickness in his throat and drops his gaze to the floor. "You're doing an awful lot of pretend touching," he says pointedly. Arthur is silent for a few moments before dropping his hand. "What were you doing out there?" Arthur asks then, voice neutral. "Why? Are you pretend jealous?" Merlin pulls needlessly at the hem of his shirt, heart jittery. "Don't project," Arthur says smoothly. "Though you should know our great love story becomes far less convincing when you go cavorting off into the dark with other men." "Are we back to this, Arthur?" Merlin asks, looking back at him. "I love it when you can't say what you mean, and I'm sure Leon would be gratified to know you think so highly of him." "It's not Leon's virtues I'm questioning here." Arthur's mouth curls, derisive. "Oh, give me a break," Merlin sighs, and runs a hand over his eyes wearily. "Don't be so cliché. And being easy while on the rebound isn't." "Stop," Merlin warns, "or I swear, Arthur." "You did always like Leon a lot," Arthur goes on, vicious. "Do you honestly think I did something?" Merlin demands, voice rising helplessly in his anger. "Are we really doing this again? Are you so invested in such a low opinion of my character?" He stares at Arthur, daring him to answer, chest already tightening in expectation. Arthur looks back at him, unwavering, and just as Merlin thinks they might stand there forever, stubborn and proud and unforgiving, in the middle of Morgana's parlour, Arthur breaks his gaze, looking down at his glass. He sighs heavily. "No," he says, sounding exhausted. Now come on, they're opening presents in the living room. He turns, pauses in place without looking at Merlin, then walks out of the room. After taking a moment to settle himself, Merlin follows. On his way out, he hears the balcony door click softly open behind them. The gift exchange is already in full swing by the time they step into the living room. Gwen and Lance are handing out their share of presents amidst loud laughter and camera flashes and jazzy renditions of Christmas carols. Gwen gives Merlin a curious look when she notices them slipping in, but he shakes his head and smiles at her, and she grins back, appeased. Arthur sets his glass down and takes a seat in one of the armchairs, and Merlin wavers before sitting himself down on the carpet beside it. Arthur's legs are warm along the length of his back. Where do you go? Lance says, coming over and handing each of them a small box. Actually, wait, don't answer that. Merry Christmas, you shameless bastards. If you two left another stain, Morgana threatens from a few feet away. Speak for yourself, hussy, Arthur shoots back as he opens his box, but Merlin can hear the shades of fatigue still in his tone. Merlin opens his own box and finds a tie, dark blue silk with stripes of red and white. Sorry that it's not very much, Gwen fusses, now standing before them. No, it's lovely, Merlin lies, lifting the tie out of the box. I'll wear it the next time we meet. Arthur's is basically an inversion of yours, Lance points out. They match. Merlin looks up to where Arthur is holding up another tie, red silk with stripes of blue and white. Jesus, Lance, old gay couple gifts already, Arthur drawls after a moment. You are an old gay couple, Lance tells them, rolling his eyes. They really are, Wildy laughs, coming over to them, Leon now with him. You should have heard them over dinner. Merlin concentrates on carefully tucking the tie back into the box. I think old gay couples are sweet, personally, Gwen volunteers. Yes, but are you an old gay couple with presents, is the important question here, Morgana says. Maybe we're an old gay couple who doesn't think the joke's funny anymore, Arthur snaps, getting to his feet abruptly. God, you're crabby, Morgana says, narrowing her eyes at him, then turns to Merlin. Did you not let him finish or something? Or something, Merlin agrees, rising and following Arthur over to the tree. Arthur is already gathering up his share of the gifts, face drawn tight, and Merlin follows suit silently. He feels worn now, wanting more than anything to turn off the lights and curl into himself and get away from all the things that he's known and left. The same wretchedness radiates from Arthur beside him, all suppressed anger and unhappiness. Merlin hardly pays attention to the proceedings that follow, handing out his gifts and grinning obligingly for photos and nodding along with the chatter about him. The economy getting to you too, Pendragon, Wildy jokes at one point, even as he puts the hat Merlin had bought for him on his head with a flourish. Your gifts have lost their usual pretentious and refined quality? Merlin rouses himself at this. He had forgotten to worry about the possible inequity of their gifts and how it might be read. He's right, Morgana agrees from where she's putting on the earrings from Arthur in front of the mirror. Not quite your usual level of self-indulgent extravagance this year. But still charming all the same, Gwen points out, fingering the petals of the orchard plant, looking pleased. Had to celebrate Christmas just like the rest of you plebeians, I guess, Arthur only says. Merlin turns to look at him, wondering just a little, but Arthur studiously ignores him. After a few moments, Merlin looks away. It takes another hour for the others to hand out their presents, and by the time it's Morgana's turn, Merlin is horribly weary. Beside him, Arthur plays listlessly with the personalised corkscrew Vivian had given him. Here you go, boys, Morgana announces, placing a package wrapped in metallic purple in Merlin's lap. Best for last and all that. You always say that, and it's never true, Arthur says, without force. Morgana scrunches her face at him. Merlin manages a smile and unwraps the gift. Inside are several glass figures shaped like mushrooms, their heads bursting with bright colour. Aren't they delightful? Morgana says with a small smile. Thought they'd go well with all the other peculiar things you two have lying around your place, particularly that god-awful glass fish you insist on keeping on Arthur's desk. Merlin stares down at the mushrooms, heart heavy in his throat. They're ridiculous and delicate and full of small and certain happiness, and he blinks hard just to keep back the tears suddenly welling, hot, in his eyes. He can feel Arthur, quiet, beside him. They're fantastic, he finally says, looking up when he's sure his eyes are dry, sounding weak to his own ears. Ironic deco. Definitely our thing. Morgana says nothing. She stares at Merlin's face, then Arthur's, then back at Merlin's, and Merlin tries to make a silly face at her, just to distract and reassure, but she's already turning away, calling out to someone else. Merlin stays where he is, watching as Arthur stands and begins to throw their gifts haphazardly into one of the shopping bags. Arthur pauses when he is done, glancing at Merlin and then the mushrooms still resting in his lap. His gaze stays there, and something flits across his features, something terrible and brutal, and Merlin's heart jumps at the sight of it, but the next moment, it's gone, and it's Arthur, bored and controlled and unhappy once more. "You can keep those," Arthur finally says, then turns away. "Merlin, you forgot one." Merlin looks up from where he has placed his own gifts in a small pile, the tie from Lance and Gwen, a coffee mug with a gun trigger handle from Will D, a book from Leon, and the mushrooms. Across the room, Morgana is waving something at him. Most of the party has moved into the kitchen, or out onto the balcony to drink, and it's just a few of them now, helping to clean up the clutter left behind. Merlin frowns, sure that he hadn't left anything out, and makes his way to her slowly. "I always you bend all the bags now," she explains, handing him a white envelope. "Making sure we don't throw out another sapphire-encrusted ring with the rubbish." "And yet Gwen still married him," Merlin says, laughing a little, then studies the envelope in his hands. "This isn't mine." "It was in your bag," Morgana shrugs, then pauses looking at him. Merlin fiddles awkwardly with the envelope under her gaze. "Can I help you?" he tries to joke. She continues to study him. "I love the two of you together," she finally says, eyes kind. "All right?" Merlin opens his mouth and closes it, but she only nudges him lightly on the jaw, a small smile on her face, then turns back to shaking out the bags. He watches her go, a small but fierce sense of affection warring with guilt. Morgana loves Arthur in a way that few really understand. Unforgiving but strong and steady, he can't help but feel that he is letting her down in a profound sort of way. He finds himself staring blearily at the envelope and shakes himself a bit. Curious now, he turns it about in his hands before opening it carefully. Inside is a smaller envelope, and immediately he recognizes the soft ivory color that Arthur prefers for his correspondence. On the front, 2M has been scrawled, and something inside him coils painfully at its familiarity, the same words having prefaced lists and notes and memos scattered about the flat over the years. He looks about, heart knocking wildly, and he sees Arthur speaking to Lance in a corner, back turned to him. Merlin hesitates, uncertain, before retreating from the room. The bathroom on the floor is occupied by a drunk-sounding Vivian, so he locks himself in the one upstairs by Morgana's guest room. The bathroom is decorated in purple tones, and he sets the envelope down on the plush plum carpet before squatting in front of it, chin resting on his knees. His heart still pounds madly, and his fingers are cold and clammy when he reaches out to turn the envelope over so the flap faces him. He briefly considers simply returning downstairs and slipping the envelope, unopened, into Arthur's coat. It could be an accident, after all. It could be something forgotten and not meant. But it's Arthur. Arthur who made lists of everything, and who checked the oven twice before they left on holiday, and who often paused just to rearrange the framed photograph on their nightstand before climbing into bed, and who sometimes gave the hired lady a day off so he could clean the flat himself, sleeves rolled up, face sweaty but content. Arthur, whose coldness and cruelty, even, are calculated and planned. And no, Merlin isn't meant to find this. And before he can think too much about it, he reaches out and rips open the envelope. He's careful to expect both everything and nothing. But when he unfolds the sheet of paper he finds inside, tears come away, hot and wretched. In Arthur's very careful, curling script, "Things I loved about you, your odd collections, your singularity, your knees, your kindness. For what it's worth, Merry Christmas, M. A." The sky's only hide the way you feel. When Merlin comes out of the bathroom half an hour later, Arthur is leaning against the wall next to the door, eyes closed, the top of two buttons of his shirt undone. "You always hide in bathrooms," Arthur murmurs without looking at him. The sight of Arthur loose-limbed and soft like that is unbearable, and some sad, furious thing begins to swell in Merlin's chest. "What is this?" he demands, shaking the envelope in Arthur's face. Arthur opens his eyes and regards the envelope blankly before looking up. Merlin knows the vision he must present, eyes still red and cheeks flushed and face ragged, but he stares back, steadfast. After a few moments, Arthur rises to his feet. "What is this, Arthur?" Merlin asks again, louder. "You can't do this." "They can hear us downstairs," Arthur reminds him coolly, now opening the door to the guest room. It's a small and cramped space, the only furniture a twin bed and a small nightstand with a lamp. "I don't want it," Merlin says, following him over the threshold and thrusting the envelope at him. "Then dispose of it as you see fit," Arthur grunts, turning on the light. "No, take it," Merlin insists, distress making his heart pound animal wild. "You can't do this, Arthur. You can't make me one of your fucking lists every time something goes wrong. You can't just write, 'I love you,' and expect me to come crawling back." Arthur grabs his wrist and pulls him forward roughly, slamming the door behind them before whirling round to face him. Arthur's face is flushed a dark red, and Merlin recognizes the sharp embarrassment there alongside the fury. "I don't recall any such line in my correspondence," Arthur bites out, hand tight around Merlin's wrist, all the softness of a minute ago now gone. "Or are you just reading things you want to see?" "You know what you wrote," Merlin says, throat feeling raw. "And nothing therein suggested that I wanted you back, crawling or otherwise." Arthur smiles, horrible and insincere. "But this is just business as usual for you, isn't it, darling? We've both seen how you love holding this kind of thing over me." "That's bullshit," Merlin whispers. "No, you love it," Arthur mocks, now releasing Merlin's wrist with a dismissive flick. "Arthur, here's another list for you, Merlin," Arthur talks over him, "since you're so fond of them. Things I hate about you." "Don't," Merlin warns, the envelope crumpling as he turns his fingers into his palms. "How fickle you are," Arthur continues, heartless. "How underhanded, how you always, always use my affections against me." Merlin feels the anger and grief that had seethed quietly all evening begin to swell. "Fuck you, Arthur," he says, hoarse. "Don't confuse me with your father." Arthur's mouth twists. "Playing the daddy card again," he sneers. "You're getting predictable." "It's not a card," Merlin hisses, trying valiantly to keep his voice down. "Stop calling it that. It's not a card. It's the only thing you know. You played your father's game all the way through to the end, and you're still playing it. I mean, God, look at us. What are we doing, Arthur? What the hell are we even doing? Lying to our friends, kissing and touching like it still means something, making ourselves miserable. All so you can trump your father one more time." "Listen to your own fucking contradictions," Arthur laughs, cheerless. "You're not playing the daddy card, but I'm playing the game. Are you trivializing my relationship with my father, or aren't you, Merlin? Make up your mind. That's not the point," Merlin says, voice frayed. "You know it isn't." "No, you're absolutely right," Arthur agrees, stepping closer now, terrified in his contained fury. "The point is that you dismiss or invoke my father as it serves your needs. The point is that you're so fixated on how my father has ruined your life or our life that you can't even bother to see things from my side." "I tried, Arthur. I stood by you for years and listened to your father tear down everything that ever mattered to me because I was trying. My sexuality, my self-respect, us. And you think it's been easy for me? You think I liked hearing him talk about you like that? You think I fucking rejoiced every time he refused to acknowledge us?" "But that's the problem," Merlin says, now feeling all of his heartache settle heavily upon him. "You railed and railed about your father, but you didn't do a goddamn thing about it. You let him work you back onto your knees, and then you took it out on us instead. See, this is what I'm talking about." Arthur jabs a finger at him.
This is exactly what I'm talking about. The way you always twist shit to fit your needs. No, Merlin tells him, voice breaking a little. You have no idea how hard the past months got sometimes. You have no idea. You call me fickle, but you're the one who couldn't decide what we were worth. Don't fucking talk to me about worth, Arthur shouts, careless in his anger. You decided that just fine on your own. Don't, Merlin warns. Don't you dare accuse me again. Oh, I'm sorry, Arthur Mock apologizes, snide. So you didn't come home with another man? I didn't do anything with him, Merlin shouts now, helpless in the face of the rage that sweeps over him. I swore to you that I didn't. Was he good to you, sweetheart? Arthur's smile is a cruel thing. Arthur, stop. Was his wallet thicker than mine? Arthur continues relentlessly. Was he thrilling and new? Did he sweetly promise to be with you for the rest of your life? Fuck you, Merlin swears. God, fuck you so fucking much. Don't you turn your own insecurities against me. And don't you talk to me about insecurity, Arthur seeds. I'm not the one who crawled into some stranger's lap so I could feel wanted. I'm not the one who threw everything away for a fucking sense of validation. Don't you dare make this about me, Merlin says raggedly. What started that whole night off, Arthur? Or are you going to leave that part out? Are you going to disregard how it was your own complete inability to do anything about your fucked up relationship with your father that drove you into a drunken fit in the first place? No, Arthur counters. No, you don't get to blame this one on my father, Merlin. Not this one. It's always about him, Merlin yells, his words spilling from some wretched place. Whether you like it or not, you should have seen yourself that night, Arthur. And you know what the best part is? You become your father. You become just like him. The same unkindness, the same heartless streak. You're no better. He stops then. Arthur is silent, face drawn as he stares at Merlin. Fuck you, Merlin. He finally speaks, voice startlingly quiet and raw. You have no right to talk to me about heartlessness. You have no right to talk to me about being unkind. I'm not the one who left. He looks away from Merlin and shoves his hands into his pockets, the line of his shoulders brittle. The sight of it drains Merlin of his own bluster and fury, leaves him with an ache instead, deep and known. I hated what we became that night, Arthur, he says then, hushed. There was no way I could have stayed. You left, Arthur only says, and something comes over his face then, some wild and sad thing, but in the next moment, it's gone. Downstairs, someone laughs shrilly. The sound lingers, jarring in the space between them. After a minute, Merlin looks down at the envelope, now crushed inside his fist. He unclenches his fingers and watches it unfurl on his palm. What now? He asks, looking up. And he hates how unsure he sounds after everything, how unsteady. What now what? Arthur mocks, still turned away. We deconstructed our demise and catalogued our mutual disappointment and loathing. I'm glad. Any therapist would be proud. Arthur, what, Merlin? Arthur snaps, turning to look at him. What do you want? What do you need to hear? It'll be all right, darling. Everything will go back to the way it was. Look at us. It's over. Arthur drops his gaze to the envelope in Merlin's palm before turning away abruptly. He runs a hand through his hair and takes a long, shuddering breath and quiets. Let's go back downstairs, he says then, toneless. People are already asking questions, I'm sure. Merlin looks at him for a long moment before clumsily jerking his gaze away. His knees suddenly feel weak. Right, he says, taking a few steps back and reaching for the bed behind him before lowering himself onto it. I need a minute. You go down first. He looks at the envelope in his palm, places it over his knees, and tries to smooth out the creases with shaking fingers. He shuts his eyes, feels something terrifying begin to swell behind them. People are full of inconsistencies, he thinks wildly. They grip your wrist tight enough to bruise. The same fingers that had curled tenderly over your hip bone. They say cold and brutal things with the mouth that had pressed gentle against your neck. They tell you it's over after they had lain in bed with you,
sunlight soft on their spine, murmuring plans for the rest of your life together in your ear. But it's not just that, is it? They leave with their life packed into boxes when they yearn to stay. They say, "I don't ever want to see you again," when the thought of it breaks their heart. They wreck and ruin when they want to only curl behind the man they love, to touch him, to tell him, "I'm sorry," tell him, "Let's make this work," tell him, "You know, you're still my everything." A soft thump reaches him, and he blinks open his eyes, startled. Arthur still stands by the door, one hand on the knob, head now resting against the panel. "God damn it," he whispers after a moment. "Arthur," Merlin murmurs, misery swelling thick in his throat. Arthur's face crumples at his name, and he drops his head into his hands. "Fuck," he swears softly into his palms. "I don't want it to be over," Merlin says hoarsely, feeling worn and bared in the deepest parts of him. "I don't fucking want it to be over, Arthur." "I don't either," Arthur tells him, voice still muffled by his hands. "But God, you're going to have to change. You too," Merlin insists. Arthur drops his hands now, showing his face, red and ragged. "We're going to have to change," he finishes, expression wrecked as he looks at Merlin. Merlin nods mutely, finds himself curling his fingers around the envelope once more. Arthur continues to look at him, seeming to waver, then walks towards him. Merlin's fingers curl more tightly in expectation, but Arthur only sits on the floor by his legs, head falling back, resting against the edge of the mattress, eyes closing. "Jesus, Em," he whispers then, weariness unravelling his voice. Merlin's heart stutters at hearing his nickname again. He is filled with a sudden need to tell Arthur everything. "That guy from that night," he blurts. "Nothing happened between us, Arthur. I got drunk at the pub. I was alone. He was there. He helped me home. That's all it was." Arthur says nothing, though his brow furrows slightly. "And it killed me when you wouldn't believe that," Merlin continues, some of his anger returning, quieter now, but insistent still. "It killed me when you were more willing to believe that I had done something, that I would ever do that to you." "I don't think I ever really believed you did anything," Arthur cuts in, eyes still closed. Merlin pauses, trying to wrap his head around the confession. Arthur blinks open his eyes and lifts his head, turning now to stare at Merlin's knee. "But you knew exactly what you were doing when you let him bring you home," he goes on. "You knew what the sight of it would do to me. You knew the state I was in that night. That's what got to me. That you would flaunt my insecurities in front of me like that. That you would test me in such a way. Arthur, Merlin, let's stop with the pretense." Merlin bites his lip. It wasn't untrue. A part of him had wanted to hurt Arthur that night. Perhaps even badly. God, that week had been utterly unbearable. Uther had been unremitting, and Arthur had been cold, locking himself in the study to shout at his father over the phone, coming out only to be vicious or devastatingly silent. Arthur's moody fits had become frequent by then, but this one had been different, more brutal and unrelenting, and as the onslaught wore on, Merlin had found himself becoming vicious too, pushing back during their fights and trumping Arthur's heartless overtures with his own. And the night when it all fell apart, Arthur had been unbelievable, drunk, and angry. And Merlin had recognized the fear and sadness underlying all the fury. But he had become so tired of it all, honestly. Tired of being unsure of himself, and of Arthur, and of them. And he had left to get away from it all, if only for a little while, terrified as he had been of the sight of their life falling apart. And so he had wandered through the city alone, and stumbled into a pub on a dark street, and met a man there whose curious and tender smile had broken his heart. "That guy," Merlin says now. "He reminded me of you, you know. He was kind and gentle, and I missed that in you so much that night, Arthur." Arthur's gaze slips from Merlin's knee to the floor, expression pained. "And missing it made me angry," Merlin continues after a moment. "At you. At your father, and I realized I had no idea where I stood with you anymore, where we stood, and it
terrified me. So yeah, maybe a part of me did want to test you. Maybe part of me did want you to hurt. And I was wrong to do that. But then you took it so far, Arthur. You took it so far beyond that. God, some of the things you said, I know. Arthur tells him roughly. I know. I said all kinds of shit to you that night. But I was fucking angry too, Em. I knew exactly what you were trying to do. I knew exactly what you wanted from me. But you wouldn't back down. And of course, I didn't either. I lost control of the whole thing and fuck, then you just left. Arthur chokes on the last word, and his hands move up to cover his face once more. Merlin's eyes fall to the back of Arthur's neck, bared and bowed and brittle, and he wants so much to touch Arthur there, to soothe him. But he doesn't, stilled by the uncertainty of it all. I told you, he said instead, fighting to keep his voice from quaking. What we became that night, I couldn't bear it. I couldn't stay there. Arthur says nothing, face still buried in his hands. But God, Arthur, I didn't expect things to just end, Merlin whispers, feeling wretched. You didn't come after me. You didn't call. And then when you finally did, it was only to ask me to pretend for you. And you have no idea what it did to me. I thought it had ended. Arthur lifts his head and looks up at Merlin, voice hoarse. It isn't fucking fair of you to hold that against me. He pauses for a moment. And it's not like you gave me any reason to believe there was still something there. He finishes, gaze unwavering. I was waiting too. Merlin looks back at him, throat filled with 1,000 conflicting things. He settles upon one. I'm sorry, he murmurs. Arthur's brow crumples a bit at this, and he lets his head fall against the side of Merlin's knee. God, I'm sorry too, Em, he says raggedly. His breaths are warm and shuddering through the thin barrier of Merlin's trousers, and Merlin is overcome by such a fierce surge of relief and affection that he doesn't hesitate this time to release his hold on the envelope and let his fingers fall on Arthur's head, tracing the golden strands there. My father, Arthur speaks, before quieting once more. I'm sorry for what I said about him earlier, Merlin says, but I won't take all of it back either. I won't ask you to, Arthur says, turning to bury his face against Merlin's leg, and then, after a pause, but it's never going to be easy with him, and I wish like hell that you try to understand what it is I go through with him, Merlin, how hard I try to make things work. I do try. Merlin feels some of the heartache return. But I hate the way you let him get under your skin. I hate the way you seethe for days without letting me in. Arthur is silent. Merlin runs his knuckle softly over an ear. But the worst part is the way you get so full of doubt because of him, he continues. And the way you take it out on yourself, on me, on us. You too, Arthur cuts in. You get unsure too. I'm not the only one. I know, Merlin says, fingers stilling. Arthur lifts his head off Merlin's knee, dislodging Merlin's touch, and looks up. Then I need you to know that when you start cornering me or testing me, it only makes me more unsure, he says. I need you to trust me when things are getting really bad with my father. I need you to believe that I'm trying to change things. And will they change? Merlin asks, not with contempt or unkindness, but only soft weariness. Yes, Arthur answers without hesitation. Not now, not soon even, but I need you to believe that I'm trying. I need you to believe that I'm on your side, and I know it's been terrible lately. I know I've been fucking terrible, but I need your support, Merlin. Sometimes it's all I've got. Merlin nods wordlessly. Arthur continues to look at him, then reaches up to curl his fingers around one of Merlin's hands. And I need you to know, too, that I don't mean any of the god-awful things I say to you, he says, sounding wrecked. Arthur, Merlin breathes. Arthur's fingers tighten, and his head falls forward against Merlin's knee once more. I don't mean any of it, he mumbles,
Fuck, you're the world to me.
He leans forward and kisses the side of Merlin's covered knee, and Merlin feels a shock of arousal so deep and certain that he bites down on his lip violently.
Arthur,
he says again after a moment, voice tremulous. Arthur kisses him again, and again, higher up on his thigh. And when Arthur kisses his hip, so soft and sweet that it's unbearable, something in Merlin breaks. And then he's dragging Arthur up with both hands, and the envelope is fluttering to the floor, and he's on his back on the bed, and Arthur is crawling on top of him, and Arthur's mouth is hot and urgent on his own.
God, Em,
Arthur moans in between kisses.
God!
The bed is narrow under them, and they nearly fall off, towing off their shoes alone, so Merlin cradles Arthur close between his knees and tries not to become unravelled by the familiarity of it all. But Arthur's smell is all around him, and the softness of Arthur's tongue is nudging at the corner of his mouth, and the cool metal of Arthur's ring is pressing against his neck, and Merlin feels such yearning that he's lost in it, and he clutches at Arthur mindlessly, mouth hungry and open, hands a violent drag down Arthur's spine. But it's not just him. The hold of Arthur's fingers around his hip is a little too tight, and Arthur's teeth are sharp in his mouth, and Arthur's already rocking against him, not in an animalistic way, but close and full of longing, and Merlin can feel everything in his own chest echoed in Arthur's heavy touch.
Merlin,
Arthur is soon mumbling against his collarbone, kisses wet and messy.
Fuck, Merlin, I know,
Merlin whispers back. His words seem to soothe Arthur, if only a little. Arthur's kisses slow down, and his hands are surer of themselves when they drop down to undo the buttons of Merlin's shirt. And when Arthur spreads his fingers over Merlin's bare chest, right over his rabbit-fast heart, Merlin, too, is calmed.
I thought makeup sex was supposed to be brilliant,
Arthur says, a little hoarse, lips quirked ruefully.
But I feel like I'm about to fucking cry here, Em.
You always did have a lot of feelings,
Merlin tells him, smiling. Arthur stares down at him for a few moments, then lifts his hand off Merlin's chest and brings it up slowly. He rubs his thumb across Merlin's still smiling mouth.
It's been a long time since I've seen you smile,
Arthur murmurs.
It's been a long time since a lot of things,
Merlin says wryly, letting his smile soften. Arthur huffs, then drops his hand.
Yes, well, I'm presently doing my best to rectify that situation, he says.
Merlin laughs at this, and Arthur laughs too, and kisses him wetly. And it's all so newly wonderful and dear that Merlin feels like the one about to cry. But then Arthur is undoing Merlin's trousers and dragging them off him. And Merlin is helping, and soon he's too busy with the happy motions of trying to get both of them naked to think about crying at all. And then they are naked, and the expanse of Arthur's skin is pressing down all over his own, and Merlin is mouthing at anything he can reach, the curve of Arthur's shoulder, the sharp jut of a collarbone, firm softness of Arthur's chest. He knows it all. And Arthur is touching him endlessly, tracing the ridges of his ribs and down the plane of his belly and the knobs of his knees. And Merlin knows all of this too, knows his body through Arthur's fingers. After several minutes, their touch is slow, focus, linger on the soft parts becoming hard, and then Arthur's tongue is generous, and Merlin's mouth stretches wide, and both their fingers are clever until it's just Arthur's hips rocking into his. The rhythm, primal, their cocks straining and wet and honest between their bodies. And all the while, a craving unfurls inside Merlin's belly, visceral, known.
Arthur,
he soon stutters out and tries to explain it with his knees and hips. And Arthur understands. Of course he understands. And kisses a nipple and slides his fingers down between Merlin's legs, touches Merlin's hole lightly, presses just the tip of a finger in before drawing it out.
Been too long,
he mutters, and then, after a pause, hold on, I think I know where the harpy keeps her lube. He draws off of Merlin and swings his legs to the floor, then suddenly stops. His expression becomes uncertain.
Should I get a condom?
He asks after a moment, without looking at Merlin, voice painfully casual. Several beats pass.
No,
Merlin answers quietly, understanding the real question there. Unabashed relief
floods Arthur's face, and he turns back to Merlin and kisses the line of his jaw before leaving the bed. A moment later, he pauses again and returns and grabs a pillow. "Just in case," he mutters, holding the pillow in front of his cock. Merlin rolls his eyes, and Arthur laughs and waddles his way towards the door. He opens it slightly and cranes his head around the corner before slipping out. Merlin listens to the patter of his feet down the hall, then sits up and looks down at himself, realizes his socks are still on, and peels them off. He wonders a little at the jittery feeling in his belly, runs his fingers over where it flutters the most. Arthur slips back in a minute later, pillow still held in front of his crotch, now holding a small tube aloft. "Straight from her personal collection," he announces. "Scandalous," Merlin drawls. "No, it's fantastic," Arthur smirks. He drops the pillow and closes the door behind him before making his way towards the bed once more. Merlin watches him, and his heart suddenly swells at the sight of Arthur coming to him, so familiar and beloved that it aches. Arthur pauses before the bed and looks down at him, seeming to sense something. "What?" Arthur asks, careful. "I missed you so much," Merlin whispers, heartfelt. Arthur stares at him, then draws a breath, slow and shuddering. "I missed you too," he murmurs, voice unsteady. "I missed you like hell, Em." He falls onto his knees on the bed, and Merlin's chest feels heavy with want. "Come on," Merlin urges, leaning back on his elbows and parting his legs. Arthur knee crawls towards him, lube still clutched in his fist, and when he reaches Merlin, he kisses him, deep and indulgent. Arthur's hands soon begin to fidget between their chests. Merlin starts when something cold drips onto his skin, then whines when two lube-wet fingers nudge at his hole. "Yeah," he breathes, lifting his hips, letting his legs fall open a little wider. Arthur smiles against his mouth, then kisses him once more, this one fond and chaste, before drawing off. He settles on his knees between Merlin's legs, the narrow bed forcing him to hunch, wet fingers still pressed lightly against Merlin's opening. After a moment, he slowly pushes them inside, and Merlin falls back on the bed, and his elbows give out. It hurts a little, untouched as he's been for weeks, but it's already so good, already so known, Arthur filling that space inside him like that. Arthur begins to pump his fingers in and out, rhythm measured and deliberate, leaning down to press kisses to Merlin's hip. Merlin pants softly above him, toes curling against the covers. "All right," Arthur murmurs, pressing a kiss to the inside of Merlin's thigh as he slides in a third finger. "Good?" Merlin nods, eyes falling shut. And this becomes his world. Arthur's warm breaths against his skin, Arthur's hand tenderly cupping his knee, Arthur's wet fingers pushing inside him, softening and opening him there. All of it together sends a wave of affection through him so intense that he gasps and opens his eyes. Arthur's fingers push in harder now, and Merlin moans softly, hips trembling from how good it is. And when Arthur tries to withdraw his fingers several moments later, Merlin is filled with such a sharp need to keep him there that he grabs Arthur's wrist. He looks down to see Arthur staring at him, and without breaking the gaze, he guides Arthur's fingers back inside him. "Stay," he orders shakily. "Fucking hell, Em," Arthur rasps out, voice husky with arousal, as he starts up the steady thrust of his fingers once more. Merlin keeps his own fingers wrapped around Arthur's shifting wrist, eyes rolling back when Arthur touches that shudder good spot inside him over and over. A low whine crawls out of his throat. "Fuck," he whispers breathlessly, pumping his hips now to work Arthur deeper inside him, his cock heavy and red and wet against his belly. His hand soon falls away, and Arthur's fingers are rougher now, enough to sear a little, twisting deep inside and stretching him wide. Arthur breathes in heavy stutters, and when he looks up at Merlin, his gaze is dark and heated. "Wanted," Merlin finds himself mumbling. "Arthur, want it." Arthur exhales noisily, thrusts his fingers in once, twice more, then draws them out and sits up. He wraps his hands around Merlin's thighs, spreading him wide and pulling him closer. But it's all too slow for Merlin, all too measured, and he is suddenly so wild for the feeling of Arthur inside him that it knocks the breath out of his lungs. He hooks a leg around Arthur's waist and flips them over, barely managing it on the bed's narrow frame, Arthur making a surprised noise as he lands on his back. Merlin crawls over him and kneels over his hips, feeling Arthur's cock wet and hard brush against him. "My boyfriend is frightening," Arthur mock whispers, hands settling on Merlin's thighs. "My boyfriend is too slow," Merlin whispers back, reaching down and wrapping a hand around Arthur's cock, smearing pre-cum across the head and down the length of it. Arthur moans, throwing his head back, hips jerking violently. Merlin pumps his cock a few more times, getting him wet, lust surging hotly in his own chest. Then he shifts forward and dips his head just to watch, before dragging the thick swell of Arthur's cockhead through his opening. Arthur's fingers dip sharply into his thighs. Merlin shifts his hips down, working just the head of Arthur's cock inside him. Draws off for a moment, then fucks down on the tip of it, if only just to feel Arthur opening him up once more. "Shit, Em," Arthur swears below him. Merlin looks at him and gives him a small smile. Arthur stares back, chest heaving and face wonderfully flushed, and Merlin doesn't look away as he works the rest of Arthur's cock inside him, sliding down in a single filthy glide. His hips settle on top of Arthur's, and he lets his hands fall on top of Arthur's chest, distantly aware that he is shuddering. "Miss this," Arthur mumbles. "God, I miss this, Arthur," Merlin whispers, already grinding his hips down in small motions. He had missed this too, Arthur filling him, full and raw and impossibly close, the act at once simple and devastatingly infinite. After a minute, he fucks down a little harder, panting harshly, feeling the sweat pour behind his knees. "Fuck," Arthur groans below him, hips lifting as Merlin's thrusts pick up pace. "God, fuck. Shh." Merlin shushes him, remembering belatedly where they were and who might be listening. He forgets himself again a moment later as he whimpers loudly, now working himself on Arthur's length relentlessly, pleasure thrilling up his spine, threads his fingers over Arthur's chest, clutching at the hot, sweaty skin there, and listens to the sound of his flesh opening and being filled. Arthur watches intently below him, mouth slack, fingers gripping Merlin's thighs hard enough to mark. "Ah," Merlin breathes out, the rhythm of his hips near brutal now, rocking down mindlessly. "Fuck." Arthur makes a desperate noise beneath him, and one of his hands settles on Merlin's hip, and the other slides to the base of Merlin's spine, and then the room is spinning, and Merlin is on his back once more, Arthur above him, cock still buried deep inside. Merlin glares, vaguely affronted. "All's fair, Em," Arthur sing-songs softly. "Is not," Merlin huffs, even as he hooks his legs around Arthur's waist and draws him close. Arthur laughs and kisses him messily, then lifts himself up on his hands and begins rolling his hips, fucking in with long, hard strokes. Merlin moans throatily at the stronger, rougher drag of Arthur's cock inside him. "Yeah," he pants, reaching up both hands and clutching at Arthur's wrists. "Arthur, ah!" Arthur's thrusts deepen, opening him up in ways that are new and familiar all at once, and Merlin is breathless with how good it feels, how fundamental, this raw thing unfurling between their bodies. "God, Merlin," Arthur groans softly, gaze startlingly focused above him. Merlin only whines back, and Arthur drops to his elbows, head falling forward onto Merlin's shoulder. His hips begin to snap against Merlin's violently, cock shoving inside at a furious pace, and Merlin arches, shaking, nails digging into the soft skin of Arthur's wrists. He feels overcome in every part of him. "I fucking wither without you," Arthur suddenly rasps out, dragging his face along Merlin's, their cheeks sliding roughly together. "You know that? Arthur," Merlin gasps, getting caught up in all of it, the joy and the ache. "Fuck." The thrusts are near vicious now, consuming. "Don't let me leave." Merlin whispers shakily against Arthur's cheekbone. Next time, fuck, don't let me. But the rest of his words are lost in the crush of Arthur's mouth and the unrelenting rhythm of Arthur's hips and in the tenderness of the fingers that Arthur flutters down his neck. And then Merlin's release is upon him, sudden and breathtaking and violent. And Arthur fucks him through it, fucks him until he's fevered, until he's quaking, until Arthur too is coming, warm and wet and shuddering. Then Merlin drifts, lets his mind soften and dim. He's vaguely aware of Arthur's quiet movements around him. And when he comes back to himself, his breathing has settled and his heart has calmed. And now Arthur is mouthing things, dear, lovely things, into the nape of his neck. After cleaning themselves up as best they can, they step cautiously out of the room to find the house empty. The sounds of laughter and music and Wildy's shouting float up from the balcony, and after taking a minute to try and smooth out their shirts, they make their way downstairs. At the bottom of the staircase, Arthur suddenly tugs Merlin towards the living room, and Merlin lets himself be pulled along, tightening the curl of his fingers around Arthur's. In the middle of the room, Arthur stops, wrapping his hands around Merlin's hips and drawing him close. He gazes steadily at Merlin for a while, then smiles wryly and looks upwards. Merlin raises his own eyes and sees the familiar spring of mistletoe hanging above them. He laughs loudly, and Arthur kisses the sound out of his mouth, and then it's just slow minutes of soft tongues and sweetness remembered. The click of a heel against the wooden floor makes both of them start. Morgana stands a few feet away, a glass of champagne in her hand, expression appraising as she glances between them. She seems to find what she's looking for, her face loosening after several moments into a small smile.
"Shameless bastards is right," she murmurs as she comes towards them.
She wraps an arm around both of their shoulders and gives them each a chaste kiss on the cheek before grinning. There's still 5 unopened bottles of wine, and William wants to play Pin the Unicorn, and Leon promised to sing for us, she announces. "Christmas isn't over yet, boys." And when she shepherds them out onto the balcony, Wildy begins to expound drunkenly on the beauty of gay sex, and Lance tells him they have no morals, and Leon presses glasses of champagne into their hands with a small smile. And all the while, Merlin feels Arthur's fingers warm and secret, tracing the length of his spine. Merlin is exhausted, and a little drunk, when they get back to the flat well after midnight. And he's glad for that excuse when his first step inside brings a rush of hot emotion, tears nearly welling at all the familiarity of it. "My car," he had protested when he had been tugged towards Arthur's instead.
"We'll get it tomorrow."
"My stuff, my flat,
tomorrow,"
Arthur had only said, his grip tight.
"Just come back with me tonight."
As Merlin walks through the flat, he realizes how much of himself he had left behind. One of his scarves lies draped over the back of an armchair. A small pile of his music records still clutters the surface of the coffee table. The pillow that he had liked to curl up on rests, as it always had, near the balcony door. And beside it, his collection of cactus plants, unmoved from their hazardous sprawl across the floor. He thinks of Arthur leaving all these things untouched. Arthur, who for all his cruel pretense, had been unable even to clear this space of Merlin's presence. Who had let himself remember and let himself be haunted by what they had lost. The thought of it alone fills Merlin with an unbearable ache, and he hastens over to the aquarium lining one of the walls in the living room and peers inside as he tries to quell the coiling in his heart. He is cheered by the sight of Watson and Crick swimming leisurely around the floor of the tank, with a pair of yellow-bellied soldier turtles they had bought a little over a year ago. Behind him, Arthur putters around the room meaningfully, making a small cacophony of noise even as Merlin feels his gaze on his back. After a minute, Arthur comes up behind him.
"Have you been feeding them?"
Merlin asks, squinting at Crick, who looks up at him before paddling away, unconcerned.
"Shit, Arthur, of course I fed them," Arthur soothes, now settling his arm over Merlin's shoulders.
"God, Merlin, that's all I did these past few weeks. Drink myself stupid and feed the turtles and eat bad Chinese food." Arthur's tone is dry and self-deprecating, but there's a bit of truth in it too, a raw thing that still lingers. Merlin reaches back and cards his fingers through Arthur's hair. "Not in that order, I hope," he says lightly. "Sometimes," Arthur murmurs. "Sometimes all at once. I was a mess, Em. You have no idea."
"I do, actually,"
Merlin assures him, letting his fingers slow and soften against Arthur's skin. Arthur is quiet for a moment, then kisses Merlin's jaw and draws off of him. "Get to bed." He gives Merlin a light shove towards the hallway. "I'll be there in a minute." Merlin stumbles a bit, then rights himself and makes his way towards the bedroom. He pauses at the threshold, fumbles for the light switch, then steps inside. It smells as it always has. His organic soap, Arthur's fancy shampoo, plants, cologne, them. Merlin goes to the dresser and draws Arthur's letter out of his pocket, where he had quickly tucked it when Arthur had turned his back. He smooths out all of the creases one final time and slips the envelope under a row of socks. There are others saved, of course, a hoard of Arthur's lists stuffed now into a shoebox back at Merlin's own flat. Merlin shakes himself free of the thought and lets himself tumble into bed, rolls over onto Arthur's side for a moment. The framed photograph on the nightstand catches his eye. Lance had been the one to take that shot, a relic of the days when he had been into cameras and had irritated them with all his candid photography. This one had been taken at someone's birthday. Leon's, maybe? Both of them oblivious and more than a little drunk. In the picture, Arthur lounges in an armchair in the profile to the camera, and Merlin stands before him, more or less tucked between his knees. One of Arthur's hands rests curled over Merlin's hip, and he's looking up at Merlin, expression fond and amused, as Merlin smiles down at him. When Lance had given them the print, Merlin had been embarrassed by the raw affection in it and had complained loudly that he looked like he was about to give Arthur a lap dance. But when he had come home one day to find it on the nightstand, framed and carefully placed, he had sat on the floor and held it in his hands until Arthur had come through the door. "Excuse me, that's my side." Arthur's voice comes above him now. "I know." Merlin buries his face in Arthur's pillow, feeling like he might be undone by the scent of it alone. The bed dips as Arthur settles beside him, and the soft clinking of glass that follows makes Merlin look up. Arthur is gingerly arranging Morgana's glass mushrooms on the nightstand. When he sees Merlin watching, he gives him a knowing smile. "They're sort of terrifying, to be honest," he says.
"I love them," Merlin murmurs, staring at the mushrooms.
"Yeah, you would, wouldn't you?" Arthur's smile softens. Merlin makes a face at him, then rolls onto his back and closes his eyes. Arthur's hands settle on him and begin to tug off his jacket. His shirt follows, and then his shoes and his trousers. "Take my socks off too," Merlin orders.
"Posse," Arthur huffs.
He strips off Merlin's socks, soft padding of feet over carpet and rustle of clothing falling and clink of metal on wood. The lights are switched off a minute later, and the room falls silent. Merlin waits a little, then turns to look, suddenly uncertain, but Arthur is already crawling into bed behind him, arms slipping under Merlin's to wrap around his chest, bare legs tangling together. Arthur's head falls forward onto Merlin's shoulder, and a shuddery sigh gusts across his back a moment later.
"Fuck, Em,"
Arthur says then, hoarse, arms tightening their hold enough to hurt.
"Arthur,"
Merlin murmurs, wrapping his fingers around Arthur's wrists. He feels it too, breathless with how close he had come to losing this tender thing between them, and a hot rush of gratitude that he hadn't. He winds his ankles tightly around Arthur's, the feeling overwhelming him for a moment before receding. Several minutes pass, quiet. "Best Christmas ever?" Arthur asks dryly, releasing his hold to tug the covers up both their bodies.
"Hardly," Merlin mumbles. "You didn't even get me a present."
"Neither did you," Arthur points out, and then after a pause,
"I bet you that's how we'll remember all this down the road. Christmas when we didn't exchange gifts."
"We've always had our priorities straight,"
Merlin hums. Arthur laughs a little, then sighs heavily. Things quiet once more. Merlin blinks into the dark. He starts to think about today, thinks about all its happiness and all its heartache, thinks about the joy of bodies and promises wildly made, and good intentions. Thinks about tomorrow. Thinks about boxes and implications. Thinks about reintegrating and rebuilding and redoing. Thinks about how much he wants it to work. How so very much he wants it to work. How fiercely he wants Arthur by his side like this for all his days. Press of Arthur's mouth to his neck startles him. And a moment later, Arthur's fingers settle over his pounding heart. "We'll be all right, Em," Arthur says then, soft. He kisses Merlin again, this time on the bare shoulder. His touch is sweet, and his touch is certain, and Merlin believes him. The end.
Lessons learned, and bridges burned to the ground. And it's too late now to put out the fire. Take